Okay. I know. All right. So are there any announcements?
Yeah. As I sent out a little blurb on our – this is Don. I sent out a little blurb earlier this morning on our upcoming Marcellus Shale Educator Conference. That will be a small – we anticipate a pretty small conference, maybe 50 or 60 folks who are focused on science education related to the Marcellus Shale and not on advocacy, but folks like us who are trying to provide unbiased or as close as we can come to unbiased science related to the Marcellus Shale and connected energy and climate issues. So that's March 18th and 19th in Ithaca. And more info will be forthcoming.
Excellent. Any other announcements?
This is Lynn Sherry. I just wanted to, in case anybody by some chance missed the missed Obama's inauguration speech, just that it looks really promising that he's going to, committing to doing something about climate change. So I just wanted to applaud that.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
I also did forward an email from Danelle Hogan, who is the Einstein Fellow with the Department of Energy concerning their energy webinar series. And I sent that out to the listserv. I don't remember the details, but that is something that people could also participate in or forward on to educators who you might think might be interested.
Amber, that looks like it's on the 6th of February.
Okay.
Yeah, you sent that out on the 18th.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah.
Okay, any other comments, thoughts, announcements? Okay, if not, we will move on to the main purpose of our agenda today, which is to continue our discussion from last week around the Next Generation Science Standards. It probably would be most helpful if those of you who at least have access to the Internet, if you go to the Google Docs and also have available the Next Generation Science Standards so that we can sort of go to things quickly. Start on the Google Docs, starting on page 2, I've read through all of the comments and sort of categorized. We now have 15 comments. That's up from 11 at the end of our discussion last week. And I kind of categorized them into those that I thought would require a lot of discussion, those of an intermediate level discussion, and those that are relatively simple. What I wanted to do was to first sort of decide what order, with everybody on the phone, what order we might discuss these in, thinking that those that are relatively simple, we will put off until the end, and if we don't have time, I will directly contact the individuals that made those comments, and if the person doesn't really feel that they're people are welcome to go read those at another time, but I just don't want to take up extra time. I did schedule this for 2 hours today, thinking that we were going to need the extra time. Another thing in terms of when we put down here what order we're going to discuss these in, if somebody can't stay for the second hour and wants to discuss a particular one early, we can put that earlier in the agenda. There's also a couple of other questions. Actually, the other discussions, question one is actually encompassed in one of the items, so maybe we don't have to have a separate item for that. The other was in the listserv, there came up this idea about producing a 2-page document with the Climate Literacy Network's thoughts about the Next Generation Science Standards that we could share to the lead NGSS states and to the Council of State Science Supervisors. And while it's a good idea, I think that and that we would just, we could make that, if people are still interested in doing that, we can make that the focus of next week's discussion when our input to the standards has to be finalized by. So we're not going to discuss that today, but just keep that in mind. So with that, let's just go briefly over the list of items that we have here. And if one of these items is yours, I mean, I don't have them all memorized real well, but in terms of the ones that are going to require more discussion, they just involve either multiple DCIs or standards, or they were broader issues. And that was item number 6 that addressed the engineering and Scott's comments with respect to the response to the Climate Literacy Network's comments in May also addressed some of those engineering issues. That's number 6. And then number 9 is the discussion about Appendix J, which has to do with the suggested model courses. And those, I think, are the two issues that we might want to have a little bit more extended conversation about. And then intermediate level discussions, there's a number of items there, and I don't have them all memorized. I know that 1 and 2 were from Art Sussman. 1 had to do with, these are relatively short. We could take these in order and do them relatively quickly and finalize them. And I guess that's what I would suggest we do with those. And if we come to find that they require more extensive discussion, then we can make a decision about whether we want to continue that discussion immediately. What I'm after here is to get the most input and the most efficient use of our 2 hours in terms of getting this input together. So what I would suggest is that we address the intermediate level ones in order, that we agree that the relatively simple ones, and for those of you who contributed any one of those, if you feel it needs more discussion, you need to speak up. Otherwise, I will just assume that we will not address those unless we really do have time at the end. Does that work for everybody?
Yes.
Sounds good.
All right. So, item 1. Now, Art Sussman, he did put his comments in here. He did draft, that's the other thing I should say, is that I asked all the leads on these to draft a response. So there's comments in here from individuals who hopefully they put their names on them. And then there is a draft response. And Art said that he couldn't be on the phone today, but he did put in here his draft response, which he actually put in a larger font so that you can find it easy. So with that one, the issue that he is addressing here is his concern that the example for the period of tens to hundreds of millions of years, the example is atmospheric composition. And he felt that it might be better to have an example around plate tectonics. My comment there was that the atmosphere does evolve on those timescales also, but it is a little bit more obscure, and potentially plate tectonics is something that is more recognizable on those timescales. And then, Don, you had some comments here too. Would you like to elaborate on those?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what I think of my own comments, but I threw in the example of the oxygenation of the atmosphere. I mean, atmospheric composition has evolved over time, and I think this is under biogeography or biogeology or some such title. I don't remember exactly. That bio in the title, if I'm right in remembering that, has a lot to do with the oxygenation of the atmosphere. There's an interplay there that I think is important, not directly in a climate change kind of way necessarily, but indirectly certainly, because the oxygenation of the atmosphere has a lot to do with the history of life on Earth, which has a lot to do with greenhouse gases ultimately. So I have these muddled thoughts that I don't know quite how to work out. But
my sense is that this is supposed to be just an example that's illustrative.
Yeah.
It's not intended to be comprehensive.
Right.
And so my sense is that it does make sense to change it. So if you go down to, let's see, pages aren't numbered. Does anybody know how to number the pages?
I'll see if I can figure it out.
Okay. But I think it's on top of page 3 or 4 in the larger font. So what Art suggested is that the HSESS2F read scientific literature critically to evaluate and communicate the causes and effects of climate change over tens to hundreds of years, tens to hundreds of thousands of years, and tens to hundreds of millions of years. Comment, this performance expectation and its associated clarification statement is much better than the previous draft. This comment is to recommend that the example in the clarification statement for the longest cited time scale focused on tectonic events that have major effects on global geography. An example is the Himalayan uplift and subsequent CO2 removal, which enabled the glaciation of Antarctica. The change to the clarification statement would be to delete, quote, or long-term changes in atmospheric composition and replace with, quote, on long-term changes in the positions of the continents over tens to hundreds of millions of years.
So this is Anigal. I really wanted to make a case to not include this because now we are changing what was supposed to be climate change to a change in the geography. And I agree with what Tamara and Don said. The changes in the atmosphere have had major effects on the climate, and that's a very direct effect. And the oxygenation, whatever it's pronounced, and CO2 reduction at the same time was so crucial and really a good example to understanding a greenhouse effect. I think that if we as a climate literacy network suggest we use paleogeography as an example, we are really taking away from using the atmosphere and changes in the atmosphere and greenhouse gas as an example. I think that would be counterproductive in my mind.
So this is Frank as well. I piggyback on you, Anna. I had added some pieces in here as well, but I think that the there are other examples of atmospheric change. I think we should stay with atmospheric change. But the the evolution of the atmosphere also had a major carbon dioxide evolution as well as the oxygen evolution. And, we used to have 90%+ carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. That was very early in the Earth's history, but I think that's kind of what they're talking about. That's billions of years ago, not millions or hundreds of millions. But still, the idea of long-term modifications to the carbon dioxide level in the atmosphere is, I think, more the spirit of where this is going to go.
Yeah, this is Gene. I think from that point of view, the timescale of 1 billion, 2 billion years ago is where we're looking at the major change from a lot of carbon dioxide and methane also to oxygen. I think on the timescale, tens to hundreds of millions of years, plate tectonics are what's important.
Okay, so Gene, can you just sort of state those time frames again so I can capture it here in the document?
Well, what I know of the oxygen revolution was concentrated 1.5 to 2 billion years ago. Before then, Earth was basically dominated by methane and carbon dioxide from a radiated point of view. The time scale of tens to hundreds of millions of years, that revolution already occurred. And it's plate tectonics, which have a very large effect on concentrations of CO2 via the weathering process and moving CO2 from the atmosphere via weathering into first the ocean and then back into rocks.
So are you suggesting that maybe we add an extra time scale in there?
Yeah.
Well, if you wanted to go for billions of years, I think the oxygen revolution would be important.
Yep.
So since if it's parallel, so you want to say, well, instead of tens to hundreds, we just say billions of years?
Yeah. I mean, you could make it tens to thousands of millions of years by just adding a zero.
Tens to thousands of millions of years. And then include both. What I'm trying to do is seeing if we can have both.
Yeah.
Have the shorter one and have the geology, the plate tectonics, and then have the longer one with the evolution of the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Good.
I think the profound effect of life. I mean, that's what you're dealing with, the oxygen revolution.
I like that phrase, profound effect of life.
So add a phrase that says on the billions of years time scale, atmospheric composition.
Mm-hmm.
But there's maybe another piece to this. It seems odd, these time steps that they've chosen to use, the way they've done it adds, you know, oddness. And I'm wondering if just why they have to have those particular time steps, as opposed to the normal way we do it is, you know, short-term versus long-term. The carbon cycle, I mean, most of it is short-term, long-term. Long doesn't mean, you know, we stop at this time step and start at that one. But, you know, there's an issue here that I think is an easier fix if they got rid of those sets of time steps. I don't know if that's an easier or a harder one for them.
Scott, I agree.
Too much precision, though.
You have to think from what those time frames are and put, you know, enough zeros in. I think if we just simply simplified the whole thing, and then we don't run into this problem of having to allocate different time frames for different events.
So what would you...
I'm just concurring with Frank. I think, you know, short and long term, and we may have to give a sense of what we mean by short and long, but...
Okay.
Yeah. You know, years versus billions of years, that kind of stuff.
I think you lose too much precision doing it that way. Long-term.
I think it's going to be more complex. I also agree. I think it's going to be more complex to revise this and make it come out the way that we would like.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, you know, but why isn't it possible for it to say, you know, read scientific literature critically to evaluate and communicate the causes and effects of climate change in the near term and long term? And drop out all the tens, hundreds, and thousands, and millions, and all that.
Well, because I think that you need to put some. I think you need to do that because otherwise people are not going to near term and long term. For some people, long term is 100 years.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Or five.
4 or 5 years.
Yeah, long-term is Milankovitch cycles, which proves that climate change is completely natural and humans have nothing to do with it. That's long-term is many different things that I have to write on, you know, very different time scales.
I think those numbers are important.
I think you lose precision when you talk about just long-term versus
short-term. But I also think that actually it is worthwhile going to billions of years, as that is the time scale of the age of the Earth, and I think you have to get there in order to cover the range.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
I believe scale was one of the cross-cutting concepts.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did they define the different scale time scales within that? I didn't see anything general. I didn't read that appendices. Did anybody else get a sense of that?
I have not seen
it. Well, there's certainly my recollection, without having looked at this in the draft in front of us, is that there's good attention to deep time in the frameworks and in the last draft, but I haven't looked to see where that is here.
So if we could come back to the final, it seemed that we were close to getting common ground on what to say when we were talking about, you know, the example that comes at the end of the the end of the red section, and the like.
What red section?
Okay, so I'm looking at on page 2 of the Google document we're working from.
Okay.
I highlighted it. I don't know if everybody can
see
that.
Okay, yep, I can see. Yep,
very good.
I can see that.
Yeah, just so you see that I'm looking where I'm looking.
Yeah,
exactly. Welcome, guys. Anonymous user 14, hello. but the point was is that personally, I think the oxidization of the atmosphere kind of introduces something a little bit different than the direction they're going on long-term atmospheric changes that relate to climate. I mean, I think, you know, whatever specific language we're going to put forth to help them with this clarification maybe we just need to zoom in on that. If that's
if I understand what Gene said, though, that the oxygenation of the atmosphere actually occurred on longer timescales than hundreds of millions of years. Is that
right?
Right. 2 billion.
So maybe if we put in here, let's see, the long-term changes, take out atmospheric composition there, put in plate tectonics there, but then add billion-year timescales that talks about the atmospheric composition and oxygenation of the atmosphere.
Well, I don't think we should use plate tectonics.
Okay.
I think Anna and I were talking about that earlier. I mean, if you look back at why was the dinosaur period had much higher carbon dioxide levels than we currently have now. I don't know what the causation of that was, but we have been reducing the background carbon dioxide level over time. It's been coming and going, but
down.
It's generally trending downward.
It's been going down roughly for 100 million years.
Exactly.
So what should we use?
There are reasons for that.
So what should we use?
The reason for that is what's happening with plate tectonics. It's driving it.
So what are you suggesting we use instead of plate tectonics for the tens to hundreds of millions of years?
Personally, if we can figure out a way to connect it to the carbon cycle, let me go back to the exact language we're using here.
Well, if you want an alternative phrasing to plate tectonics, you can talk about mountain uplift or Himalayan uplift. I mean, CO2 levels going down for the last 150 million years and somewhat accelerated with the Himalayan uplift starting about...
This is Rebecca. My understanding was that the long-term decrease in CO2, sort of like from dinosaur era to now, has to do with evolution of large... with plants on land. That was my understanding. So it was a photosynthesis thing. Does anyone support that? that ties it into the carbon cycle.
But I think the investigation that we want kids to be able, I mean, what we're talking about right now is kind of what we would want kids to be able to do skillfully.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But ultimately the long-term changes in atmospheric composition is, you know, when we're talking about climate change, I think the connection is the carbon dioxide composition or the, you know, greenhouse gas composition, methane, whatever gases we want to use, but it's still the composition we want to focus on, the atmospheric size.
Or is it the carbon cycle in general?
Right. It's where I'm, you know, if we want to say the long-term carbon cycle, I mean, when I read Earth System Science books, that's what we talk about there. But I think it's easier to get there than oxygenization or plate tectonics.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so for the tens to hundreds of million years, use long-term carbon cycle? Is that what you're
suggesting? I think that makes more sense. That's what I'm suggesting.
That works for me. That works for me.
So that seems awfully vague. I mean, what drives the long-term carbon cycle?
It does seem vague to me, but I want to...
Yeah. I mean, do we want to use the word evolution?
But evolution of what?
I actually think we could say evolution of the atmosphere, because that doesn't say at the very start. It could just be the general evolution, so we wouldn't have to change very much in the initial language.
So you're suggesting that, well, I do want to get this up to billions of years. Are you suggesting we use evolution of the atmosphere for the tens to hundreds of millions of years and billions of years?
Could be.
Yeah, they've already, I mean, they've got long-term changes, which I think is getting at evolution, the same idea as using the word evolution would be.
I'm not really sure what the best thing is to do here.
I also note that it's 128, and we've worked on one.
So much for being an intermediate one. All right, let's see. I'm gonna put in here continue discussion, and we will see how we will address this. Let's go on to number two. This one had to do with the term models. And if I'm remembering correctly, let's see, is there a suggested draft here? There isn't a suggested draft. Okay. A recommendation. Let's see. So last week we sort of came to the conclusions that models were being used, the word models was being used, whether it referred to conceptual models, physical models, or mathematical/computer models, but that
That's
one
correct.
Of the appendices actually describes those different kinds of uses. And I think we came down on the side of that the adjective should preface all use of the word model throughout.
Yes, I think that's where we were going. Karen brought the issue up. I looked up this is Jane. I looked up some of the pieces of that. The use of models was used in the Science and Engineering Practices Appendix. And I think where the group was coming down on the conference call last week was that we recommend exactly what you just said, Tamara.
Okay. Okay.
And so I'm just affirming where you were heading, is that whenever they use the word model, they specify what kind of model. They did do that in some of the standards as I read it over this week, and it would clarify all the other standards if they did so throughout.
Okay. I will draft later a statement that says that. I think what I'll do is I'll draft all the statements, put that up at the top of the document, and have people have a couple of days, a few days, to comment on them. Aside from these ones that we have longer, we're going to have longer discussions about. Okay.
Good.
Three, we're going to, so are we fine with moving forward to number, the next one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that number three is a pretty straightforward one, and I'm not going to dwell on it. You'll be able to see the comments. So we're going to go on to four. Four is another one from Art Sussman. It has to do with making the sentences on some of the DCIs are very complex. And he drafted the comment here that would be said, but basically, I mean, he's actually has suggestions for particular ones, but the basic suggestion is that sometimes it might be better to break it into multiple sentences rather than mandate that it be one sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds reasonable to me.
I think that is a good idea. And sometimes it feels like they are so dedicated to the template of using the science and engineering practices that the language is more complex than it needs to be. It could be greatly simplified, but I don't think we're going to get them to do that. I will say that I've heard from other groups that are reviewing this that it feels very education-ese and not user-friendly to the teachers who are probably going to be having to use this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not every standard, but it's some of them.
Yeah, I think I think the writers would argue that this is more written for curriculum developers than it is for classroom teachers, but classroom teachers hopefully are going to look at it, in my opinion.
Don, I would agree with you that that's probably the target audience they're thinking who's going to be using these performance expectations more.
Yep.
And those developing professional development.
Right.
And resources and things of that nature.
Yeah.
That the educator will use based on this, as opposed to the educators, jumping into this at this level.
Yeah.
Okay, so I will use ARTS. I won't go through it in detail now, but I'll use ARTS draft and make sure that we add in these comments about suspecting that the curriculum developers are the target audience, that teachers will be using them, and they should be more teacher friendly. Possibly breaking them into multiple sentences.
Yep.
Was there another comment there?
Is that okay with the group? That's certainly okay with me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tamara, the only slight modification I would recommend is that I think that there are probably a different class of people at the state or district levels who are specialists, state science supervisors, people like that who might, it's not just the developers. Who would also be the target audience. I don't know if that speaks to anybody else.
Curriculum developers and administrators?
Administrators, specialists, things of that nature.
Okay, but as opposed to the classroom teacher?
Yes.
Right.
All right, we are going to skip 5 and go to and 6 for right now, and we're going to go to 7. So 7
okay.
is on page 11, the bottom of page 11. And this actually may turn into a longer conversation than we have time for now also, but Art was saying that ocean acidification is not mentioned at all, and acids and bases are not mentioned very much. And so his general comment: the concept of acids and bases has inadequate treatment in the draft. Doing a search on acid reveals the word shows up on 8 pages. Of the 8 pages, only one time is the word acid in the bolded performance expectation. And that's in a reference to amino acids at the high school level. The other pages where acid, the word itself, or acidic or acidity show up is in the clarification statement or in the quote from the conceptual framework. There are missed opportunities to at least mention, if not highlight, acid, base, and physical science statements. Of particular concern with respect to global change, only once does the document refer to ocean acidity, and then it identifies the one. Changing the acid-base balance in the ocean is a huge issue. It should be at least referenced in several of the clarification statements. So is everybody okay with that particular draft?
Yes.
Does anybody want to add anything to it, or?
So the issue I have here, though, is given that we're talking about a release in March, I'm concerned that we're giving a concern that we haven't helped them find the solution. Maybe we just let them solve it.
There's one that we could highlight. One of the performance expectations, that would be very helpful, I think.
Yeah, if we could get something close.
There actually is one, HSESS3I.
Oh, that's the one where it's actually cited.
Oh,
that is the one where in the clarification it shows up. It's not one where he wants it to be, and it's not.
It sounds like what's most missing is a discussion of acids and bases in the physical science section. Did anybody look at that?
Wouldn't it be under chemical reactions under the topics? Shouldn't it be there?
It should be there.
Okay, let me go. I'll go check it out.
So under the topic breakdown, there is a section called chemical reactions. I would think it's there, unless somebody else thinks it's elsewhere.
Well, we can just do that. I mean, he did the... what? I hesitate to look up the word basis because that's a little bit too generic.
It doesn't use it the right way. I already did that, Tamara.
Okay.
Yeah.
It almost feels
like... If we want them to use the word acid more, we should give specific places to do that rather than a general direct.
Well, why don't... Instead of looking like now, if a couple... Can a couple of you volunteer to kind of look for particular examples that we can provide?
It feels like that from the Climate Literacy Network, the concern, even though I agree, the biggest concern would be if acid and base is not represented well, but that's probably going to come as a comment from the chemistry community. So if we want, why don't we focus on something that is within what we are really concerned about, the ocean acidity, so we could maybe ask Art to find some performance expectations where he would like this to be
that's a good idea.
Listed, and then we just let the chemical community worry about the acid and base. I don't know. Maybe that's too strange.
Oh, no, I think that's a good way to do it.
I think he's the one that's looked at it the most directly,
yeah.
So it makes sense to ask him to find where we would put ocean acidity.
Well,
okay,
maybe another.
And if it gives everyone a little bit of relief, I searched for acid, and it does have under chemical reactions at the middle school level stuff about vinegar and baking soda, for what that's worth.
But, I think another way of looking at what Art's asking for, I agree with the direction where we're going, but there is an issue where there's a global change issue that is better done under the Earth space domain that is not connected to the physical science domain in ocean acidification and, you know, the whole pH piece of physical sciences. That connection has not been made here. Because if you look at the core disciplinary ideas under the high school chemical reaction section, there's nothing about this connection. So, I mean, you know...
So say that again, Frank, there's...
So if you go to the high school chemical reactions standard under the topical side, if you look at the disciplinary core ideas, there's a set of ideas that have to do with chemical reactions and a set and one idea that has to do with the definition of energy. Sustainability or I don't know the other sections of the core disciplinary ideas, but there's no... They didn't connect this there, and there might be other connections. So there's a section below that called connections to other DCIs in this grade level.
Unfortunately, I don't know what you're actually looking at. Could you direct me a little bit better?
Sure. I will send, is anybody following me?
I'll paste the link, at the bottom
put
of
the link if you put it in the
right.
Google Docs,
yeah,
that's where I am.
There you go.
I just did on page 12.
Okay. I should
yeah,
be
you're
able
there.
To. So,
there it is.
Okay. So which one are you referring to, Frank?
So what I'm saying here is that the way these standards are built. Well, you know, you have the performance expectations section up top, and then you have those three blue, orange, green boxes. And in the orange box, the disciplinary core ideas section. So there's nothing that would connect if there was a global change related aspect to this. There's nothing connecting that in that orange box. And
potentially should be a disciplinary core idea that connects it.
That's what Art is getting at.
Right, and I think the human sustainability one is the connection where ocean acidity is mentioned. So
right.
If we can maybe suggest that be added in
Another one is that there is in the high school life sciences, there is one that's called Matter and Energy in Organisms and Ecosystems. Mm-hmm. There's also Interdependent Relationships in Ecosystems. That's probably, I would imagine, it's more in the matter and energy. And somewhere in there, there's got to be a life science or a earth-space science connection to chemical reactions. But they haven't. If you look at the bottom of that page that we were just talking about, there's a right below those blue, orange, and green. There's a section that says connections to DCIs in this grade level, and then it says to be added in future version. So that's kind of like we're not. Maybe we're going to help them make that connection there, but it's not clear.
Okay. All right. Well, if you have, I'll ask Art, but if you have particular ideas, you should put them into the Google Doc so that we can include it in the comments. But it's good that we have the link there. And okay. Any other comments about this one?
Thank you for bringing that to our attention where it says about those future connections.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope we're going to get something like the National Digital Science Library webbing strand map kind of connections that result from that.
Well, that's been clean, but I don't know that you're going to get in there.
Brad.
Okay. Let's move on. We're going to go to 10 right now. And 10, and this is what Scott added. What he did is he went in and compared our comments from the May draft to see how they were addressed in the January draft. And then so what I did is I went over what Scott wrote and highlighted the places where he said that it was not addressed. And some of them were already we've already talked about, and some of them, the engineering ones, will come up in our other discussions. So I don't know, Scott, are there any particular concerns you have here that you would like to highlight?
Well, I'm just noticing some of the ones that you highlighted. I don't know, boy, if we can figure them out, but there's about 4 or 5 down, which is the May 2012 draft, the HS.LS-IRE. That one got kind of split into two, and you highlighted the one where it doesn't have anything about extreme perturbations, but in fact, the second one, this is in the January draft, which would be HS-LS-2-I, it actually does have a acknowledgement, as I said there, of the differences between extreme biological. I guess what I'm saying is that I think it was addressed ultimately. Yeah, you're getting.
So I'm gonna unhighlight that.
Yeah, that one was. So I noticed that. And you can notice that one in terms of ocean acidification. Some of these things, it's interesting, clearly sometimes they took our things, or I suspect it's just how many people responded to it. In general, it does seem like they heard many of our comments. And then the only major thing here, is, as we said before, is that there's a lot of engineering stuff that we highlighted that has essentially disappeared.
Okay, well, we'll get back to that.
Yep, we'll get back to that. The other thing that we highlighted, this is in my overall comments, which is in, page 16 now. As I said, most of them were adopted, is point one. Point two is that we talk quite a bit about this distinction between humans and animals, organisms, and those distinctions seem to be still pretty strong in the document. Some of it has been improved, but I think that's a battle that we can't win at this point. It's too much change in all of it. But clearly people don't see themselves as animals or organisms, so that's fine. And then we'll come back to the engineering stuff.
Yeah.
Are there any other comments? I don't know if anyone else sort of went through that exercise of just comparing, looked at, and where things are.
Well, thanks, Scott, for going through that. I mean, it does point out is that most of our comments, I mean, we could have expected them to address every single one, but it is gratifying to know that a lot of the things were addressed.
Yep.
So, Scott, there any of the ones that are highlighted or that are not addressed that you feel like we should put in again?
No, I think the major changes is these engineering questions, and we'll talk about that later. I didn't see anything that really jumped out at me that said, oh, we really need that. It's just interesting to see how they morph from the one draft to the other. Sometimes it's just a very simple rewrite, and sometimes it just got split into various things. So it's kind of interesting how all that's evolved. But no, I think we've got most of our things covered, other than these two things.
Okay. So let's see.
We may want to put a Tamara. We may want to put something in our draft responses in some way that generally we felt comfortable with the changes made, except these
okay.
areas.
It's under the category of Don's comment about saying something that's
yeah.
good.
Yeah. As I think Don was saying that it is important to let people know that you know how we appreciate their efforts.
Okay. So 12. This was additional things that were comments by Gene Fry. Gene, are you on the phone? I think you are.
Yes.
Okay. So I actually added a comment here asking how you intended these to be. Did you intend these to be comments to put in directly in the survey, or can you formalize these any further? We don't have time to go over every single one of these.
Did you say we're on page 12 now?
Actually,
page 17.
We're on page 19.
Okay, 17.
Actually, okay, well, I just...
I see 17. The number 17 is at the bottom of the page.
Yeah. Okay, on my page, it's on page 19, so. Number
12. Okay,
number 12.
Page 19.
Just look for number 12 where it says additional comments on standards, Gene Fry.
Yeah, I see that.
See, I'm not there. Go back to 17. Point 12. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, these thoughts I had.
Yep, that's it. I mean, I didn't look at each one of these, but we can include these. We're not going to be able to go over them now, but if you could formalize these offline into actual comments that we can put in the survey, so that people know what you're exactly referring to, that would be helpful.
Jane, can you help me? Know what that format is?
Yeah, it means get on
NGSM. Okay.
It really just needs to be sentences. We can refer to the individual standard or DCI, but we need to have a sentence so that people understand the context of what you're referring to. Like, potentially have the way the text was and how you suggest it be changed, and if you have an explanation why. In brief.
Yeah. Tamara, do you just need a rewrite of what
if you could just
the
rewrite
standard?
Yeah.
So just rewrite the standard for how we would recommend that it include that information.
Right. But you should have the original standard, the other, original piece, and the rewritten piece so that it's easy for somebody to see the difference.
To see what the change is. Got it.
Right.
Okay.
And then if there is a, you know, you need to give a justification. So, you know, another sentence that says why you're making that change.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
So the original, the recommendation, and the rationale.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That would be great.
Okay.
Okay. Now, 14, Mark McCaffrey has been in on the email loop for this, but has not been able to participate in our calls. He pointed out that this is number 13. I just copied from his emails at the moment. He indicates that there's a lack of a discussion or a mention of the physics of the greenhouse effect, shortwave incoming along with outgoing radiation, and he felt that that was I think he said it was at the high school level last time, but it's now missing. And I've not been able to spend any time on this explicitly. If others, if you have thoughts, I can add them here, and then I can talk to Mark offline about formalizing a comment that would come, that we would provide.
I think that's a very good comment. This is Anna Gold again. In, at middle school, the ESS 2N standard is, talks about the explanation of the greenhouse effect, but they explicitly say they don't want to talk about the radiation bounds, and that's the assessment boundary. So I think if that's drawn at middle school, it's going to be very hard for teachers to actually teach this without using flawed representations like an actual greenhouse or a mantle or whatever. Been used. So I think that's a very good comment, especially if at middle school it's taught at a very rudimentary level.
Okay. And can you say it again? How is it talked about in the, I just want to capture
it. So it's
here.
Middle school ESS 2N. It says use models of Earth's atmosphere and surface to support the explanation of the greenhouse effect. And it has some clarifications that I don't need to read. But then it says assessment boundary, the rate of energy absorbed by different reservoirs and their effect on the radiation balance of the system are not assessed. A complete understanding of the electromagnetic spectrum is not assessed. So they are very clear that at middle school they don't need to know this. And I agree with Mark that it should be explicit at high school that they need to know it then.
Okay.
Well, I agree.
Anna, yeah, I wanted to agree too. This is Scott.
Yeah,
and I
ditto.
You agree with me. You and I, and you know, and our colleagues have reviewed a lot of material on the greenhouse effect.
Yeah.
And there is very little that's done well. And I would really like to see it in the standards, in hope that some developer is actually going to do it properly, to make these points. It's really critical because a lot of people just don't understand this stuff. So we need, you know, that's why I would like it in here, is to make sure that we get some better learning resources around this topic.
Yeah, I agree, Scott.
It also fits the learning progression concept that they're trying to promote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So would somebody like to draft the response here, or are people more inclined to let me ask Mark to draft the response?
If you want, Tamara, I can talk to Mark and work with him on this.
Okay,
this is Anna.
Yes, that would be great.
That would be great, yeah.
Thank you.
Good.
And what I'd like to do, since we don't have a whole lot of time before the 29th, I'd like this to be submitted before the 29th, you know, like maybe the end of the 28th, just so I, because I don't want to have to deal with deadlines on the 29th. So if we can try to get everybody things up in time so that people can make comments by this Friday. So if we can have draft language for everything up concisely without all the extraneous comments around it by this Friday, and I can help organize that, then we can formalize the final responses up by Monday.
Okay.
Tamara, would you like me? I put in some comments just for people to read on the modeling stuff, but that's not going to be in our final language. Do you want me to take some of that off just to simplify the document now?
Yeah, well, why don't we're going to have our conversation about the models now. We did that one already. Yeah, if you could formalize that into what we would actually submit, that would be great.
And Jane, I would keep the comment so that, you know, the rest of us can see why
right.
I commented.
Just indicate, you can either make it in larger font like Art did, or you can just indicate with a line that in all caps it says draft response,
yep.
And then put something that differentiates it from the text at the bottom, a row of X's, capital X's or something that says this is what the response is. And then any comments that are around it are fine to leave there, because I think Scott is right. Having the context for us would be helpful.
And then I think, Tamara, you said earlier that you were going to shift all that stuff up to the top, so we'll see kind of a version.
Right, so I will. So if you make it clear what is their draft comments, I will make copies of it and move it to the top so that people can find it easily when we're asking them to do this. So
good.
I guess we don't have a whole lot of time. We're going to have this done by tomorrow evening, these comments up by tomorrow evening or Thursday morning. so that we have people have time to look at them still.
Anna, just on the greenhouse one, I just posted in where Mark's comments were. There, it's over in the Earth Systems High School. I put the link there. I put the specific DCI and the performance expectation.
Okay.
Whether they're subpar, you know, whether they're subpar, but I mean that is where they're talking about this.
Okay, I'll look at it, and if you want, I'll include you on emails to Mark.
Please. But I think you know one of the things that we have to get skillful here is they're not always using the words that we're using, and sometimes the idea is in a different way. And so, I mean, this is my understanding of when you're talking about the greenhouse effect. They don't use that word at the high school level.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, but please.
Okay.
So now we've finished going over the intermediate ones. We're going to go back and talk about the more complex ones. We've gone through an hour now. We have one more hour left. So what are people's senses? Do you want to talk about the model horse appendix J first or the engineering one first?
Can we jump to the engineering one?
Yes.
I think that's actually a much more thorny and important piece. I think the model one is going to shake itself out easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Okay. So we're going to page, now that it seems like we all have different pages here, but let's see if things have settled down. 5, 6. I have it on page 10, towards the top.
What was the number of the entry?
6.
Number 6.
Thank you.
Okay, so there's a lot of concern about this. There are actually two issues. One is that the proposed solutions are only engineering focused, as opposed to different kinds of solutions, some of which are engineering focused, and that there may be other kinds of strategies. And then the other issue had to do with the comments that Scott had around engineering kind of being only to address solutions. And I don't really remember all the context. So I'm going to ask each. Karen and Rebecca, maybe, and Frank. Maybe you can sort of summarize what we have here, and let's see. And there is draft text that has been provided. So,
this is Rebecca, and I am once again. Now I'm in the car, so I don't have access to the document, but I did write a proposed edit to one of the. I would forget which letter it is, but one of the ESS3 standards.
Yes,
to try to get other solutions. Yeah, so maybe somebody else wants to read that?
Okay, I'll go ahead and read it. I'll read the entire piece. It says, apply scientific reasoning, theory, and models to construct explanations for how humans may predict and modify their impacts on future global climate systems. Clarification statement, and this is the edited one. Examples include carbon emissions reductions strategies at the international, national, and local levels, policies on efficiency, alternative to energy sources, carbon trading or taxes, or carbon sink preservation, as well as geoengineering strategies at various scales, including carbon sequestration, ocean fertilization, and stratospheric aerosol injection. Science knowledge indicates what can happen in natural systems and analyzing both positive and negative impacts of these efforts. Not what should happen. The latter involves ethics, values, and human decisions about the use of knowledge. So the previous one really focused. The previous was a clarification statement that focused only on engineering solutions,
yeah,
presuming that there was going to be an engineering solution that would work.
Yeah.
Now, as you go through the comments here, the people put in comments about different standards and comments about similar kinds of issues, and it's not clear to me how we want to address this in terms of whether we want to address the content for each of these specific examples or something a little bit more general.
Yes, I think Karen addressed there was an LS standard that also had geoengineering and didn't touch on any other topics, and I did not make a revised version of that one. I left that for her to do, or so, yeah, I'm open to that answer.
I'm not sure where that is. Was that here in the... I'm not seeing that in the comments.
I think in the notes, maybe at the very top of the... right next to number 6, it might say what the LS standard is that also mentions geoengineering.
No.
Yeah, I think it's on page... what is it? 10, at least the version I'm seeing here.
Page
and it looks
10?
Like it's HS-LS2-J.
J. Oh, I see it.
Right.
I see it.
Yeah.
Because in Karen's example, the HS-LS2J, design evaluation refined, she is suggesting that the clarification assessment boundary be revised, possibly including, quote, providing evidence that a proposed engineering solution might not work. In Rebecca's example, geoengineering is used, but there are other methods, such as reduction of emissions or conservation of energy and natural resources. This is another way of looking at solution space. Solutions should go beyond just engineering and mention other strategies, other examples, and there's just other standards mentioned there. So, and in this context, Scott, what were the particular, can you remember, or should I just go down and look at what the engineering things were?
Thanks. I think there's a general issue here that there was a decision made clearly in the last couple of months to eliminate the engineering standards and to incorporate some parts of that into the three basic science disciplines. And the problem with that is that I think in the editing of these things, the engineering part has been overemphasized, especially in the absence of any social science set of standards. And I think this is a real problem. and as I think I said in my comment here, what we have before us is a set of science standards, but not a set of STEM standards, because we really are not...
Right.
Taking technology and engineering carefully. I'll leave the math to the Common Core math standards, but this is not a set of STEM standards, and it's been promoted that way. And I would argue that the framework document is a supports STEM standards, and we're seeing something quite watered down here. It's really problematic.
Right, so what I did is I took your summary statement from the number 10 that you actually contributed to and pasted it up here at the bottom of the comments from number 6.
Good.
Which I think you stated it pretty well, that it's basically engineering in the service of science.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. And that gets back to that notion that we're also seeing over and over again, is that there's an engineering solution to every problem, and we only focus on engineering solutions. And I don't think most engineers would even agree with that proposition. So
Scott, maybe you know, there's a range of things. Engineering is one of them, but there's other things. I think, you know, if I remember right, in the spirit of what Karen was trying to go here, is there other things you can do that aren't engineering?
Absolutely.
And so there doesn't seem to be any off ramp into those other things here. It's you know, the only thing that you get is engineering.
Exactly.
And, so planning, is planning engineering? Not really. I mean, engineering comes after planning, not before. But if we're gonna, so there's got to be a way to open some space up for kids to explore other pieces of this than just engineering.
Okay, so the superordinate concept here is problem solving, and by limiting this framework to STEM
what we're getting is a lot of engineering problem solving, but it's not yet linked to social sciences because those haven't been revised yet and they're not linked to yet.
My recollection, without looking back at it, is that the frameworks, the engineering part of the frameworks, had good attention to risk assessment.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's not being reflected enough, and it is wickedly important. Holy cow!
Yeah. So you can say that again, Don, so I can capture.
Well, I think a third issue is the importance of risk assessment.
And cost benefit.
Yeah, and cost benefit analysis. I mean, those go together. And that was my recollection. Is that was in the engineering and technology section of the framework.
Right.
But that's a recollection. So.
Oh no, you're absolutely right, Don. It's absolutely there. It's quite nicely done. And
yeah, I was very pleased with that in the frameworks.
But has that been dropped out of?
I'm not sure.
And that feeds into that notion that this is really much more focused on science. What we've actually lost is some representation of what makes engineering, and I think that's a disservice to engineers. I mean, I think they should be outraged by this. We've lost a lot here.
So maybe another way of looking at this is right below that section where Rebecca put her comments, I put in a link to the high school human sustainability standard. The reason I did was because it does relate to another piece of this. But if you look at the cross-cutting concepts that are on that page, both the connections to engineering, technology, and applications of science, and the science addresses questions about natural and material world, those two areas, which is where the engineering is going to come in, do get into this space about, they don't use the word RIT. Yeah, they do. So one of the sub-bullets is engineering continues to modify these systems to increase benefits while decreasing costs and risks. And it connects to, earth sciences. And so I think that it may be in the green box and the orange box better than it is in the performance expectation. I think
I think that's the point that Don and I are making, is this is handled very well in the framework, and that's what those boxes are from. What we're lacking is they're being reflected in the performance expectations.
Right.
And that's the concern, because I think when we have the curriculum developers, they're going to look at the performance expectations primarily. So that's my concern, is that we've lost that transition from the framework to these performance expectations. We've lost some really important ideas.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the high school engineering design set of performance expectations, and I got there by searching for risk in the search field on the website, and it's got the word risk appears four times down in the green and orange boxes, but not at all in the performance expectations, which there are lots of.
Right. Yeah. So I think we're getting close to an actionable item, which is to try and find a space to move from the standards up into the performance expectations as it relates to the skill of risk and cost-benefit analysis and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And it's that range of alternative solutions. So it's not just an engineering, a technological approach, but there may well be planning and behavioral communications strategies.
Absolutely.
So do you think that we could potentially combine these two issues? So the two issues are that solutions are not only engineering-based, but there could be other kinds of solutions, as well as making sure that the performance expectations reflect some of the engineering DCIs and cross-cutting concepts.
Mm-hmm.
You think we can combine the response so that we're really explicitly giving them information that they can effectively use, as opposed to just a generic, we're disappointed in this.
So if I understand, I'm having a little hard time with you, you're cutting in a little bit, Tamara, but so taking Rebecca's edits and seeing if we can put in the cost-benefit analysis risk space into the clarification statement that Rebecca put forward, mm-hmm. I think that that would be,
yeah,
like, that would be good.
Well, see, but the Rebecca's
yeah.
only did it for one. What I'm suggesting is that we don't do
right.
it only for Rebecca's, but there was a few other standards that were identified here, and what I'm suggesting is that we potentially draft some alternative language for each of the ones that, and we're not going to be able to spend time doing it for every single one we can think of, but we have a suite of them here, maybe about five or six, and if each person who suggested one could draft an alternative text, then we could give various examples and then describe what we're getting at.
There is, this is Rebecca, and I think, Taylor, at the top of the document, there are those specific A through D letters that they're asking for feedback on, and I think one of them specifically addresses how do the DCIs translate to the performance expectation.
Yeah, but that's a checkbox. You need to be able to provide to back it up. See, that's what I mean. It was really kind of odd because you can't provide any specific comments to those. It is simply a checkbox. And I think at the top of the document here on the Google Docs, I actually say, so for that particular question, well, no, I left them off now. But last week when I had actually put the Likert scale, that's all, but these questions that they have are explicitly checkboxes. So we can certainly add our thoughts with respect to the checkboxes, but it's more important that we draft some alternative text that reflects what we're trying to explain. And I think that in this particular case, it would be useful to do for the various, so we could potentially ask Karen to do it for the life science one, and I think, Don, you have one here for physical sciences, a couple in here for physical sciences. So, and then there's another one in here for Earth System Science 3, Natural Resources.
Mm-hmm. So, Tamara, just let me test something here and see if this, I think it is specific to this. How we do the, how we transfer this information, I think is still a work in progress. But one of the ones I was talking about, which is the only place I could see adaptation, which is the opposite of the one we were looking at that Rebecca was working on, is High School Earth System Science, or the ESS 3-F. It does connect to the engineering cross-cutting concepts that relate to risk, but there's nothing in the performance expectation or the clarifying statement that has anything to do with risk. But if you just...
So when you say ESS 3-F, you're mm-hmm. talking about the performance expectation, right?
Yes, the performance expectation. And so, but at the end of this, it says, you know, you do all this stuff to look at how engineering solutions are designed and implemented to help limit environmental impacts. And I'm wondering if we can't just find a way to slide the word risk. The risk from, you know, to help limit the risk of environmental impacts or something. I'm not trying to wordsmith it here.
Into ESSF 3-F?
Performance expectation, yes. The black right. text that's on here. Make it stand out. I know it's just, or something like that.
All right. Well, as long as I can identify the spot, then I can sort of see if I can figure out a way. So basically you're saying to have this performance expectation reflect the issues of identifying risk.
Yeah. I mean, it's down, it's in the cross-cutting concepts, but they didn't transfer it up into the performance expectation. Because right now all they're doing is, you know, making, you're evaluating, you know, valid scientific claims on how engineering solutions are designed and implemented. But, you know, scientific, you know, how it has nothing to do with cost benefit or risk.
Right.
It has
mm-hmm.
to do with making valid scientific claims.
Mm-hmm.
And those that, you know, this is coming from the social sciences, not the physical or natural sciences.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys agree with me here?
I captured that. Yeah. That's what exactly what we're trying to do is to find ways of identifying specific. If we can identify specific examples, then it's more likely that they'll do it.
Yeah.
And
right.
And provide the text so that you've identified this particular place, so we can. I can take a look at that particular one. I would ask if others who have suggested some of the others to do the same thing. Identify where and suggest the wording, as Rebecca did for the first one, ESS3-H. And I can, so if we, this will be a more extensive suggestion, but it'll be multiple places where we'll suggest how this information can be. So the edits are going to be twofold. One is going to be suggesting different kinds of solutions besides only engineering solutions, and the other will be inserting in performance expectations places where engineering/risk assessment cost-benefit issues can be reflected in the performance expectations, bringing them up from the sections from the disciplinary core ideas and cross-cutting concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And then does someone, maybe, Frank, do you want to put in like a general comment so that it's sort of explaining what our...
Right, the idea would be that we would have an overarching paragraph. So we'll probably start with that, with describing those two, and I could probably draft that text describing the overall idea, and then if we have a suite of examples of which are concrete suggestions on how to do it, that would help. Again, we're not going to get to all the possibilities, but if we can insert it at least in a few places, that will be successful.
So I'm willing to try and do what Rebecca did relative to the 3-F.
Okay.
And see if we can come up with some modified language and then some explanation. I'm willing to do that.
Okay.
Yeah, I will note that I'm seeing in both ESS 3C and 3D that they actually do have costs and benefits in the clarification statement.
In the clarification statement?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for both of those two.
Is it C and D?
I'm looking at the middle school one, sorry.
So if there are ones that do include cost and risk, then maybe we could highlight those as examples of what we'd like to see in other places.
That's interesting that they chose to put a more sophisticated skill in the middle school and not the high school.
Middle school level. Yep. Concur.
Got to work together, people. Yeah.
We're watching.
There we are. There's a place that might work. This is HSESS3B. Analyze and revise solutions for developing, managing, and utilizing resources that would increase economic, social, environmental, and or cost-benefit ratios. That's starting to get at some of those analysis tools, though, of course, it's being restricted just to resources. But that may be one of the performance expectations we can play with.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is Scott, maybe you're editing right at the moment.
This is done.
Okay, Don. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put in a section here just so we can bring it together a little bit more easily. I'm going to place draft examples below this line.
Right.
Just so that it's easier for me to find everything. Okay.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Number
four.
Okay. So, just to be specific here, it's the ESS3-F is the one I'll put the proper language in there.
Right. Yeah. I actually that's up. That is already up here, Frank. I indicated you were going to do that already.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you want that like Rebecca did down here.
Yes, exactly. And I'll take Rebecca. I'm going to take your text and put a copy down here also. So if you want to edit it further, do it down at this. I know you don't know where we're talking about yet, but
okay.
You'll see it. It's at the end of section 6, and there's a in all caps and underline, a line that says, place draft examples below this line. And so I will, later on, I will.
Got it. Thank you.
Well, Frank, I don't want you to just, I want you to draft what I'm going to actually paste into the.
Oh, I know. I'm just, this is a starting step.
Okay, that's fine.
Don't worry. This is not going to look the way it does when I'm done.
Very good.
Okay. So, are we ready? So, we have a lot of work to do on this one, but I think that we can sort of get this started offline.
Do we think we have all our bases covered on that one? Like, is someone going to make sort of look through the standards to make sure we haven't missed any examples where we could be inserting these concepts?
Well, what I was suggesting is that we don't, I don't think, I mean, if people want to look for other ones, that is great, and you certainly can add them. I don't think we have an individual who can take the time right now, unless somebody wants to volunteer, but I can't, to go through and look. What I'm suggesting is that we're probably not going to be comprehensive in this. But if we
right.
can cover a lot, if we can cover it in various venues, meaning in earth sciences and physical sciences and life sciences, if we have examples in each, we'll at least get it inserted in some way.
Oh, and,
yep.
And
I could say in the over, and then I can actually reflect that in the overarching comment, which says these are some examples, and they're not exhaustive. I'll say it better than that, but they're not exhausted. That there probably are others, but this is what we could come up with in the time that we had.
Right.
This is
so
Scott,
I'm fine with people adding additional ones. This is what you need to do is, you know, identify the standard and then put in what it said and what your suggestion or vision is. And if it does need clarification, put in a clarification. I mean, and I don't want to use the word clarification because that has other context here. But if you want rationale, if you have a rationale for the change, provide that. And then I'll write an overarching paragraph that explains what the issues were. And everybody will have a chance at that too. Okay?
You don't want to tell me, this is Martha. If you want me to just edit that sort of for punctuation and grammar and to pass it by somebody just for that alone, you can send it to me. I know.
Okay,
I
well, it'll be here, and I can send you an email when I have it up there. But I'll post it on this Google Docs.
Okay.
But
I
appreciate
that.
Thank you.
It's important to realize why we're doing this, and it's just to create placeholders in the performance expectations so other people can use them. So they don't have to be perfect, but it's just as long as somebody can say, oh, yeah, I'm you know, talking about risk because it's in the performance expectations. That's all.
Right. All right. Exactly, Scott.
Yeah, there's a practical component to getting these words in the right places.
It opens the door for doing more development and work and not missing the opportunity as this develops.
Exactly. We don't have to have it perfect, but it's really good to have it in there. Good.
Well done.
Okay. Let's get to Appendix J, the model courses. And the issue here is that there were three model courses that were laid out. And the third one basically sounded like, well, you can just do what you're already doing and you don't have to worry about it any further, which is very unacceptable.
We've come this far. You're not getting to slip back.
Right. Well, it's kind of like saying, okay, we've done all this work, but you don't have to do anything in terms of changing what you're doing. And I do recognize that the best thing would be to completely do away with the current courses at the high school, science courses at the high school level, and replace them. That's not going to happen either, but people are going to default to that model without us suggesting an avenue that they can do the minimum. So Don has said, Don had an extensive email that laid this out, and he has put it in here. It's on, at least in my version here, it's on page 15. It starts about halfway down the page.
And where I'm looking, it runs between pages 14 and 15.
Tamara,
why are these different?
I want to mention something that I think is important in this, and it's just the experience here in Washington State. Part of the difficulty for us in implementing these standards is actually testing. And I can tell you that we're not expecting to be able to do much in this area until about 2016. I mean, it may be adopted, but we're not going to be seeing changes in the classroom. So I think it's important to realize that just simply having these progressions, models, whatever, in place, how it gets implemented in the classroom is going to be really determined by what the state's expectations are around testing and assessment.
Right.
It's not something I was expecting until I started working with folks here in Washington State.
And so, Scott, building on that, I think the reality is that the third model is really the beginning of the process.
Yes.
Because you have a cadre of chemistry teachers, physics teachers, and biology teachers in most states. That's what you have. And so, you know, how you're going to start with that. And so, which model one or two is more the design state that you're building toward, as opposed to where you're starting, and how you get from, you know, the academic year 2014-2015 to 2015-2016. You know, you see where I'm going here, and the question is, how quickly can we get the cadre built on which model, and that's I think the biggest question that states have to wrestle with.
Yeah, Frank, what it suggests is that while these are learning progressions which are really student-oriented, something that everyone's going to have to think about is sort of what I would call the instructional progression. How do we take those standard physics, chemistry, biology teachers and move them into this much more integrated curriculum? So there's going to be, there needs to be a lot of work thinking through how we actually do the professional development with teachers to get to that point.
Absolutely.
And absolutely. See, that when you start looking at it at that point, and this is exactly, I think, what you're saying, Frank, is that you start to understand why option three is important, because that's where you start. That's when you build that progression in teaching styles and strategies.
Scott, the only thing I would amend your statement with, and see if you guys agree, is that that's assuming, option three is assuming that you're only dealing with the cadre of teachers you have right now.
Yes.
And I think there's another piece to this, which is we, especially in earth-based sciences, we need a large infusion of new pre-service teachers because of the existing conditions. And that's going to be different in different states. It's going to happen at a different time. But right now, this document, Appendix J, doesn't talk about, you know, here's where we are today, here's where we're going to get to. I just kind of lay them out as three options.
Yeah.
A great point, Frank. Absolutely agree. So there's a two-prong approach. It's both in-service and pre-service training for teachers, professional development.
Yep. And I imagine there's also emergency certification.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But until we have those conversations, I think, you know, understanding who teaches this and how they get up to speed to teach it and who is the ideal person to teach it. I mean, these are different conversations.
Yeah, very good.
Okay,
so Tamara, to you.
This is Don.
Yeah.
Don, go ahead.
I'm a little worried that the chunk that I wrote there is long, but I think I agree first off with what Frank and Scott have been talking about. I should also let folks know that I got an email from Michael Y. Sessions, who had been forwarded my email over the weekend, that suggested that maybe we were misreading Appendix J, that if you read it closely, it makes it clear that option three is the least desirable of the options, which I went back and reread it, and I think that message is there, but way too subtle. So I revised my comments to pay attention to the fact that, or the idea that that the option three, if you read Appendix J closely, is identified as the least desirable option, but it's not identified that way clearly enough.
If you look at it quickly and you look at where these things are briefly described, you'd have no idea that choice is a lesser choice than the other ones. And I think you really actually have to do a pretty close read to tease that out. It is the simplest choice for schools and states to implement because it doesn't require changes in staffing or course structure generally.
Right.
So I think Frank's suggestion of recognizing it as a stepping stone is language that I ought to put into the text that is there. But I wonder if you all think that what I wrote is too long, on point, or what?
Well, my sense is, and there was an email discussion about this too, and
like
one of my discussion questions in the agenda is, I actually think that a more extensive response is probably warranted here.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about a specific specific DCI or standard that's going to upset the apple cart in terms of making sure we address, you know, every single woman. This is a more general comment, and I think that it's worth really making it clear, lay out a clear argument for our concerns. So I'm fine with a longer response from this particular one.
I'll let others respond first. Not hearing anything. I'm going to jump in, guys.
Go ahead, Frank.
So, you know, Tamara, I agree with you. I think this requires a much more lengthy. I mean, they've opened the door into this space, which is the implications of these standards, which is the beginning of our thinking of how states would actually do what's implied in these standards.
Yeah.
I don't think that we need to, in the comments here, need to spend a lot of time here. But I think it does open the door to the beginning of a process to really focusing on this piece of, this is the next bit of work. It took us a lot of work to get to these standards and performance expectations and the whole rigmarole. Now comes the even harder step, which is and I think that's, you know, maybe we allude to that, you know, our interests in the community are in this space as well. That we're not, you know, sitting idly, you know, job done on the standards. But, you know, I don't think, you know, I don't know how the states are going to do this and how the development community and the professional development community and the pre-service community and in-service community. I mean, there's a lot of work here. And I think it's going to be important to explore with the amount of work that we've done over the years in the standards.
Okay, so Don, do you want to spend a little bit more time revising this, or are you comfortable with the changes you've made now and want others to take a look and possibly edit it further?
Yeah, I think I'm at a point where others can edit it.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I will move this also, just like the other ones we said. Anything that's been drafted, I'm going to move to a section probably at the top that we will basically no longer add explicit comments, but try to accumulate what we're actually going to submit as our comments.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else will be down below for people to reference if they, you know, as they're drafting it. But I think that that would be the most efficient way of gathering this together. Okay?
Yeah.
Tamara,
yeah?
Do you want us, as we write draft-level submissions, do you want us to put those directly into the Google Docs up at the top, or do you want us to put those in the particular number and then you move them to the top?
Well, you know what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to, under my very first note at the top of the Google Docs, I'm going to put a new section called Draft of Final Responses.
Okay.
Good.
And then I'll put in a number for each one and the top title, and then that's not going to go in. But everything that you put under that is to be the draft response. Okay, and I'll copy those off after probably we get off the phone. I'll get myself confused.
So just to clarify, I like the direction you're going, Tamara, is that the conversation we were just having with regard to Don's Appendix J piece, there will be a, you know, you'll lift some of Don's language and pull it up to, you know, number 14, for example. And then we'll do all of our editing on that in that space once it's up there. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, toward the top. So the Appendix J was, what number was it? Number 9. So it'll be in this list as number 9 up at the top with simply the title of what it is. And potentially, I guess, in that particular case, it'll have Don's name on it as the first person who brought this up.
That's where we'll edit
these final comments, and we'll move Don's comments up there and the other ones that we've talked about. And I will also move the ones that are the simpler ones that we're not going to talk about today but are really simple comments, I'm going to move those also up here so that everybody can read them. And the only thing is questions, and I'm not sure if you have specific questions or want clarifications. Actually, is there a way to put in comments here that aren't editing the text?
Yeah, there's a comment function
in the insert menu. There's
So up here, you're either editing the text or you're using the comment function. Just don't put comments into the text itself at this level. If you want to put them down below, that's fine. But
you
might not be looking there explicitly.
Yeah. That's good.
Okay?
I just need clarification. Tamara, do you want us to, if say, Don's text has something I want to comment on, do you want me to comment on in the top part where it's number 9 or bottom part?
Top.
Okay, so all comments relative...
What you could potentially do is if you have something that was extensive down below, you can put in your comments, see comments in the lower section. You can say direct people to look there, but I think it'll be too much to ask people to be going back and forth. So it's just hard to find things. So make all your comments using the comment tool up near the top, and make all your edits up near the top. And I'll try to get in the next half hour or so, I'll try to get at least the titles up there. I won't promise to get all the text up there right away, but just so that we have the list of items we're going to be making comments on. So the number and the first line are not part of the final draft comments, but everything under that will be anticipated are.
Right.
Okay?
Woohoo!
Is everybody good?
Go ahead, Anna.
20 minutes. Should we just go quickly through the simple ones?
Yeah.
Sure. All right. So let's see. Number 3. Number 3 was mine. And basically it's... let me just get down there. One of the it talks about. Let's see, what is the actual standard? It gives an example of is basically the diminishing glacial ice reduces the amount of sunlight reflected from the Earth's surface, and it's basically getting at feedback processes. But glacial ice is not. While that is a factor, sea ice is really the physical part of the system, and it lends itself more to the particular to the positive feedback. So what I was going to suggest is that we replace diminishing glacial ice with diminishing sea ice. And I think in the text, the draft text, I actually put all kinds of ice, but I think the sea ice is a I did draft the text here. Yep, there it is. It's a little bit further down in mine. It says, Tamara, draft response. And I said, we suggest that the phrase be changed to diminishing sea ice, glacial, and continental ice reduces the amount of sunlight reflected from the Earth's surface. And then I had a question under that that asked whether we should leave it at sea ice or include all three kinds of ice.
You could also
glacial
just
ice and continental ice are the same thing.
No, wait.
Yeah,
what?
That's what I said.
Yeah. Say that again?
I think if you just do diminishing sea ice and glacial ice, because glacial and continental are the same.
Or just say land ice.
They're not to me. But land ice, I could put land ice. I'll go with. But glacial ice and continental ice are two different things. But scientifically, anyway.
That's proven what's not.
I can change it.
I appreciate
it
that perspective.
Good.
Okay. So that was
another
that was one.
Is to say diminishing ice, period.
I think calling out sea ice, personally, I think calling out sea ice, I mean, there's an important distinction between these two processes.
Yes.
And they're really important differences. And if we got to, I think calling out sea ice is important in this space.
Right.
Yep.
Especially because when you diminish sea ice, you're changing the albedo from an average of 0.75 to an average of 0.1. As opposed to changing continental ice, you're changing it from 0.75 to maybe 0.3 or 4. It's a huge difference, and it's a very important difference. There's a whole lot of other processes, which I won't go into. Mm-hmm. And so...
keep it at sea ice and land ice.
Sea ice and land ice.
Sea ice first.
Sea ice first. Okay, number five.
I'm sorry, just... Is there a reason why we're avoiding glacial as opposed to land ice is a bit vague for me. It just seems imprecise, whereas sea ice
because
is a technical term.
The reason is that Greenland and Antarctica are mostly continental ice, not glaciers.
Yeah.
And that's from my perspective as a scientist who studied these processes.
I'm with you.
So I would prefer to put both glacial and continental ice.
Hey, let's go for it.
That's fine. This is your principal comment. We've talked about it, and I think you're championing this one forward, and see what happens.
Okay.
Do what they take.
I can put in the I can add in addition to the suggested change. I can give the rationale, and so I can say why sea ice is important. So. And also making the suggestion that they have to only put one, that it should be sea ice.
Yeah, great.
Okay.
We're with you, and thank you.
It was
all right. Number five, this is the one that Don suggested that we also make comments about when things were good. And so we actually probably should have, anybody should add their comments to this, and then we can just collate them at the end in the top section, and then number five. I'll move anything that we've already said positive up there, and then once we get anybody else's comments, we can just collate them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Number eight.
I'm sorry, Tamara, just one thing. I'm not sure. Maybe this is a good point for us to talk about. The word climate is one thing, but the concepts of climate are actually much better represented and more expansive than the 25, the term itself.
I think
if we focus on the word, it actually diminishes the connection as opposed to the whole Earth system.
Right,
I invite you to add that. I think you're right.
Yeah, I think if the general sense is, and this is shown true with the May and other reviews, that the concept of the climate literacy guide concept framework and the work that we're looking at here is very expansive in its connection.
Mm-hmm.
If we just take that tone, that's where I think it is. Is much larger than the word. I agree with that, but I think we can go further.
All right. Do you want to just edit that sentence?
When we bring this up, I'll put my edits in here. But I just wanted to say that and see if everybody agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I wrote the thing and I agree.
It's not a criticism. It's just more.
Oh,
I think we can be more full throated in our
yeah.
and wider.
Okay. Number eight was Rebecca was pointing out that the climate change topic seemed to have been lost, and that the performance expectations were incorporated into. Into ESS 2 and 3. I pointed out that there at the high school level there is now a weather and climate topic that wasn't there before. Rebecca said she just wanted to note this change, and we don't need to actually make any further comment on this, and I concur with that.
Okay.
Does anybody else have any thoughts about this?
Works for me.
Okay, 11. 11 is, I'm getting there. Okay, Karen made the comment that there was no mention of germ theory of disease. And actually, Scott says here that it is mentioned in the appendix on the nature of science. What happened to
example,
I thought there was other comments here, but they just seem to have gone away. Anyway, I think Karen mentioned this as an aside because it's not directly climate related, so we weren't going to make any specific comments about this. I did ask my husband, though, who's an MD, and he always commented to me that in medical school the term germ never shows up. And it's not... What's kind of interesting is that so I asked him about it yesterday, and he said, no, in medicine it's not really used, but in more general conversation it is used. So it's probably, it probably should be there at some level, but anyway, I don't think we're going to be commenting directly on this as it's not directly related to our main focus.
Yeah, the word disease is hardly mentioned as well.
As long as there's something in there about bacteria and viruses, and you know what? I actually missed that. Did anyone look at the life science ones?
I think some people did, but...
Not for this space.
Yeah. No.
I think for us, it's a no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right, and so there's two others that Anna added, and I'm going to let her describe those because I haven't even read them yet.
Yeah, there are two quick edits. One is at the kindergarten level. They are putting the performance expectations as construct an explanation for how plants and animals, including humans, can change their environment while meeting their basic needs. And example is a squirrel that digs burrows. And I just thought it would be important for elementary students to understand that it's that not just random animals make changes, but that actually humans make the biggest changes. So I just would suggest using an example from humans and maybe farming or something like that. It's somewhat trivial, but I thought it would be a better example than a squirrel.
Yeah.
And the second one is at the elementary school level where they say, construct a model using abstract representations and examples to describe differences between renewable and non-renewable energy sources. I really don't like the abstract representations. Yeah. Having reviewed all kinds of lesson plans for clean, anything that addresses understanding renewable energies and models aren't abstract models. They are actually the most hands-on and engineering-focused representations that we have in clean, like solar cookers or make-your-own wind turbine. So I just would suggest getting rid of this abstract representation because it seems like a limitation that's not necessary.
I agree. I don't know what it adds here, and I'm not even sure what a representation is.
Well, so technical terms, there's phenomena and representations. Representations are like more illustrations, and phenomena are things that you do and physically manipulate.
it just strikes me. It's
well, would you, I mean, we talked earlier also about using the adjective in front of the word model, and so construct what, physical models or?
Physical models, yes.
Conceptual, I guess physical models. Based on what Anna said, I would say physical models, but potentially conceptual models also.
Yeah. Yeah.
I somehow even feel like we don't. It doesn't need to be limited because a teacher could do it either way. But limiting it to abstract just seems unnecessary.
Right.
Because the especially if you talk about non-renewable, then it's getting harder. It's harder to build a steam turbine. Versus you could do that, but you could also go to an animation or go visit a turbine or something.
I would just say that it meant with professional development, everything we do at the elementary level is hands-on and minds-on. We link the two together. So I agree that it shouldn't be just abstract.
Okay.
At the elementary level, it should certainly be concrete as well. The physical model language would work.
Mm-hmm. So what about, do you think we need the word model in there at all? I mean, construct representations and examples might be better. I mean, because the reason I would suggest if we don't need the word model, we sort of are going to be saying otherwise in another place that we want that adjective to be in front to clarify so that, I mean, at the fourth grade level, nobody's going to assume that it's mathematical models. But, I mean, in other places, that was a confusion because I would generally read there's a lot of cases I would generally read something first to mean mathematical models. So, and I know, so anyway, so the question is, do we need the word model in there?
Is the simplest thing to drop the word abstract?
Yeah.
It just How seems does to it... need to be redundant. Construct a model using representations and examples? I guess that makes sense.
I would agree with the abstract word as opposed to the model word because in the appendix that talks about this practice, they do talk, they do clarify what they mean by models to some degree at this level. So I imagine they want the word model, but the abstract is really the biggest issue.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're linked with this, you know, science and engineering practice, you know, this forcing of that language into these performance expectations, but we have to live with that one. So, yeah, I think dropping abstract is the easiest way.
Yep, I agree.
So just
Occam's
if you,
razor.
If you look at the practice appendix, it talks about, you know, progressing from concrete pictures and physical scale models to more abstract representations. And you would think that the more abstract would be at the higher grade bands and concrete would be at the more... And yet they have abstract at the very lowest grade level.
Yeah, that's an issue.
So I think it's inconsistent with their own logic.
Yeah.
Yes. Good catch.
Yes.
It's an easy one to win, guys.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. I think we've done it for today.
Yeah.
I am working on making these edits at the top, but... thanks, everybody, for participating. We will try to turn this around quickly, and thanks, everybody, for making your edits. I will send an email out when this is ready, and we can start moving the draft final responses up until this section.
Tamara, I'm just curious. Next week, you talked about or suggested that we would use our time on the 29th not to talk about this because it will be in, of course, hopefully the day before, but that we would talk about what we would say is sort of like a two-page comment about the Next Generation Science Standards from the perspective of...
Yeah, I think that there was a vigorous email discussion about that, and I think that we can even spend that time talking about whether such a... whether such a document is worthwhile, and if we agree, we can sort of talk through what would be the points of it and begin to draft it. And I thought that we could use next week's time to talk about that.
Excellent.
Would
that be good, this is Martha. Would that be a good time to, you know, we've been talking about doing a little PR campaign. Would this be something to talk about in PR, like interviewing some of the CLN people about the standards, or would that be too early?
you know, I think a lot of the discussions here that aren't really comments directly on the standards, but more general comments about, you know, beyond the standards, and then might be really nice, you know, one of our, maybe, but we haven't done any PR. Maybe that would be a nice story.
Well, and there's the other part. I'm not sure when the State of the Union, but we may have some climate change comments in the State of the Union, which is what? Is it next Monday or Tuesday? I'm not sure when it is.
So just on that point, guys, I think it's premature, Martha. I think when we get to the deployment implementation phase is really when where that's going to be most valuable. That's just my perspective. And on the State of the Union piece, I think our community is well positioned to connect three of the things that the president talked about, not just the one. Because if you remember in his inaugural address, he talked about science and math teachers preparing students for the future. That's us.
Yep.
Climate change. That's us. And, you know, not letting other countries lead on renewable energies of the future. That's also us. If you connect those three, you connect those three, you get a really rich and interesting space. Yeah. Not just the climate change is something we need to face. Students and the new energy economy is where you face it.
Yeah.
So I think you know, as we get into that space, it gets really rich and interesting.
Yep. Yeah. Good.
And this is one last point, guys. We don't say this often enough, I think, in our own community, but, I mean, this has been incredibly valuable to work with you guys, and I really value everybody's time and passions and interests. So thank you.
Amen. I wanted to thank everyone for your big ideas and for your detailed attention, both.
Yes, I truly appreciate everybody's willingness to not only talk about it, but to put it in a form that makes it a little bit more efficient to provide that to the broader community, and especially the committee writing these standards.
Well,
thanks everybody, and we will exchange information further this week, and we will talk again next week.
Excellent.
Thanks everybody.
Thank you, Tamara. Thank you all.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
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 Bye.